It is a privilege to be here today, passing on to you not only the teachings of my great teacher, Shunryu Suzuki Roshi, but by passing on the meaning of his teachings, giving meaning to the practice of all of the great Buddhist ancestors, all the way back to Shakyamuni Buddha. Today's talk is on the fourth Bodhisattva's four embracing actions, identity action, which to me has been the hardest to understand. But the thing is, it's not that the concept is hard to understand, but the name, identity action, it's really a poor choice, because identity action, unlike loving speech, for example, has no immediate visual. Like you say identity action, and when I hear it, my mind just goes blank. There's just nothing I can connect it to. But Okamura Roshi gives us two things. He says that just as each of the five fingers of a hand have different names and shapes and functions, each one of us has our own uniqueness and beauty and dignity that can never be exchanged with any other person. So still, we're part of an interconnected whole, like the five fingers are part of a single hand. And alternately, he gives the example of a violinist who plays in an orchestra, and the violinist may play in her own unique way, but she never forgets that she's in a harmonious orchestra as an entirety. This is identity action. So identity action refers to those actions of an individual self who identifies with being part of an interdependent whole. And another way to say this is identity action is a practice for benefiting self and others simultaneously, like a violinist benefits herself and the orchestra simultaneously. And this is possible because all of us are interconnected with all beings in true reality. Continuing with the same format as before, well, I'll read a passage from Dogen and then discuss some of Okamura Roshi's commentary. I'll begin with this passage from Dogen. Identity action means to be not different, neither different from self nor from others. For example, it is like the way that in the human world, the Tathagata identifies himself with human beings. Because he identifies himself in the human world, we know that he must be the same in other worlds. When we realize identity action, self and others are one suchness. Harps, poems, and wine make friends with people, with heavenly beings, and with spirits. People befriend harps, poems, and wine. There is a principle that harps, poems, and wine will befriend harps, poems, and wine, that people make friends with people, that heavenly beings befriend heavenly beings, and that spirits befriend spirits. This is how we study identity action. So Okamura Roshi explains, the four embracing actions, which I remind you are offering, dana is the first one, loving speech, beneficial action, and then identity action. those four are practices that are based on awakening to the true reality that exists before we conceptually separate into subject and object. So when I say true reality, that's basic, it's basic reality before everything, before Buddha, before everything. It's like existence itself. And Dogen's statement, beneficial action is the whole of Dharma. It benefits both self and others widely, means that practicing the four embracing actions is not simply a method to guide others. It also helps us to awaken and mature. Through the practice of sincere offering, we become more generous. Through the practice of loving speech, we cultivate our own compassion. Beneficial action benefits self and others simultaneously. And identity action shows us how and why this benefit happens, that we are part of an independent whole and we treat each other accordingly. Regarding Dogen's words, for example, it is like the way that in the human world, the Tathagata identifies himself with human beings. And because he identifies himself in the human world, we know that he must be the same in other worlds. Okamura Roshi explains, Buddhas appear not only in our human realms, but also in other realms. And the word for realm and world are the same in Chinese. So when a Buddha appears in the human realm, that Buddha, therefore, takes the form of a human being. And when a Buddha appears in the animal realm, the Buddha may therefore take an animal form. And this is an example of identity action that the Buddha performs for the sake of all beings. So when I hear this, I think, oh, you know, that Kali I saw on the street the other day, that could be the Buddha being in an animal form for the sake of animals. When we realize identity action, self and others are one suchness. Okamura Roshi says that in this sentence, it's clear that Dogen is saying that through our practice of identity action, the basic reality of the network of interdependent origination manifests. In other words, and this is really critical, no true reality exists for us if we do not actually practice identity action. We actualize true reality within our actual practice. This is another way of expressing Dogen Zenji's teaching, practice and verification are one. Dogen is really big on this idea of as we practice, that is enlightenment itself, that sitting zazen, taking that posture, is activating enlightenment in the moment that we're doing it. There's no difference. Dogen is really strong on this point. And then in addition, practicing identity action, in other words, going around all the time with the understanding that we don't do anything by ourselves. We are part of an interconnected whole. And when we do something, it affects every being. And in fact, it's every being that is doing the thing. It's almost as if the thing does itself and we're there as a witness along with all other beings. Regarding this section on harps, poems, and wine, Dogen apparently takes these examples from classic Chinese literature. If melodious music is played and suitable harmonious poetry is recited at a party where wine is being served, people attending may become friends. And this phenomena is like a performance of a symphony. Each musical instrument has a different shape, sound, and function, but a collection of instruments played together in a certain way will create one body of harmonious music. An awakening to the reality of non-separation allows us to practice identity action. And identity action creates the music of interdependent origination. Realizing that all beings are players in this symphony allows us to study and understand identity action in our lives. So Dogen continues, for example, action means form, dignity, and attitude. After letting others identify with ourself, there may be a principle of letting ourself identify with others. Relations between self and others vary infinitely depending on time and condition. And then Okamura Roshi comments, this is an explanation of G, or action. To actualize the reality of the network of interdependent or origination, a person must use certain forms in practicing with his or her whole body. And a form of action such as this is inspired by awakening, wisdom, and compassion, all of which have dignity. If we take this attitude as we deal with our own lives and interact with others, Buddha's awakening is manifested. Dogen then says, after letting others identify with ourselves, there may be a principle of letting ourselves identify with others. It means there are also many other ways to practice this aspect of identity action. We may first identify with others and let others identify with us. And this is just one of many possible variations. There's a story in the Lotus Sutra that's really a perfect example of this. It's one of the most famous stories in the Lotus Sutra. And it's of a son who runs away from home, leaving his father. And the son lived in various other countries for a long time. And the older he grew, the needier he became. And by chance, he happened upon his father's house. And although the father recognized the poor, destitute son, the son did not recognize his father. When the son ran away in fear, after seeing the wealth and dignity of his father, the father sent servants to hire his son as a laborer, and they put him to work cleaning the wealthy man's home. While the son was doing his job, the rich father removed his strings of pearl of jewels and ornaments, took off his fine clothing, put on a coarse, torn, dirty garment, and then smeared his body with dust. And with all that, he took a dustpan in his right hand and with an intimidating voice and countenance said to his laborers, get on with your work, don't be lazy. The father used this and other devices to gain more and more contact with his son. And he gradually trained his son to be a mature and suitable heir to his fortune. This story is an example of how in practicing identity action, it is possible to first identify with others and then to allow others to identify with us. In the story, the rich father first identified compassionately with his son and then worked with his son gradually. Eventually, the son came to identify with his wealthy benefactor and accepted him as his father. Dogen continues, Guanxi, which is a Chinese poem, says, the ocean does not refuse water. Therefore, it is able to achieve its vastness. Mountains do not refuse earth. Therefore, they are able to become tall. Wise rulers do not weary of people. Therefore, they form a large nation. That the ocean doesn't refuse water is identity action. We should also know that the virtue of water does not refuse the ocean. That is why water is able to form an ocean and earth is able to form mountains. We should know in ourselves that because the ocean does not refuse to be the ocean, it can be the ocean and achieve greatness. Because mountains do not refuse to be mountains, they can be mountains and reach great height. Because wise rulers do not weary of their people, they attract many people. Many people means a nation. A wise ruler may mean an emperor. Emperors do not weary of their people. This does not mean that they fail to offer rewards and punishment, but they never tire of their people. So Okamura Roshi explains that here Dogen is quoting from a Chinese classic, Guanxi. Before he became a Buddhist monk, he probably studied this text as part of a childhood education designed to make him be a politician. That's what he was intended for by his family. So in the above passage, the text is discussing the attitude of a good ruler. According to the quote, to become a wise ruler, one must accept and embrace all of the nation's people without discrimination. One should do this in the same way that the ocean accepts all kinds of water from different rivers, or the way that a mountain does not reject even tiny bits of dirt or small stones. When Dogen Zenji speaks of the ocean and mountains in the analogy, he is referring to the entire network of interdependent origination. When he speaks of a drop of water and tiny pieces of dirt and stone, he's referring to individuals within the network in the same way that we speak of knots in Indra's net. In ancient China, the emperor was considered to be the nation itself, and all people belong to the emperor. Here, Dogen considers identity action in terms of the relationship between the self and the myriad dharmas. He discusses this relationship in the same way he discusses practice and enlightenment in the Genjo Koan, teaching that the self is a part of the vast network of myriad dharmas. Identity action is practice based on the realization of this interconnectedness with all things. I'm repeating this again. And we can illustrate this interconnectedness by, again, taking the, this is a really good example, the five fingers of a hand. Each finger has its own unique shape and function, yet all of the fingers are connected in functioning as a part of a single hand. Without its connection with the other fingers of the hand, a finger cannot properly function and exist as a finger. In this example, identity refers to the unity of the fingers that manifests as one hand. This does not mean that each finger is alike. All of the fingers are different, but each different finger can exist only in interconnectedness with the other fingers that function as part of the hand. There's no hand that exists outside of the five fingers. So the hand and the five fingers are exactly the same thing. So when we touch any single finger, we automatically touch the entire hand. And it's the same as saying that when we touch one knot of Indra's net, we indeed touch the entirety of the whole net. Our attitude toward lives and our attitude toward other beings should therefore be the same as our attitude would be toward a wise ruler. We can then wholeheartedly play our own designated role within the orchestra and at the same time keep sight of the conductor who has responsibility for the entire symphony. This is Dogen's insight concerning identity action. When he says, because wise rulers do not weary of their people, they attract many people. Many people means a nation. A wise ruler may mean an emperor. And emperors don't weary of their people. It would be unrealistic to say that we can't have expectations of reward or punishment for the effects of our efforts and activities, because we couldn't otherwise find a motivation for doing anything. Sometimes our expectations are fulfilled and we feel happy and satisfied, and sometimes we fail and we feel terrible as if we're being punished. Yet throughout all these conditions, Dogen says, in ancient times, when people were gentle and honest, there were no rewards and no punishments in the country. The idea of reward and punishment in those days was different. Even these days, there must be some people who seek the way with no expectation of reward. This is beyond the thought of ignorant people, Dogen says. And Roshi explains, in ancient China, people viewed human history differently than we do in modern times. Chinese people thought that the quality of the world and its people were progressively declining with time. They thought that ancient people before them were superior to the people inhabiting the earth in their own day. Roshi says that this is the opposite of what I was taught during my education. So this is Roshi saying about his own education. I was taught that the world is better than it was in ancient times because of improvements developed through science and technological advances. I was told that we still have many difficulties and problems because we're still in the process of development. But once human civilization is fully developed, we will be released from all difficulty. And he, Okumura Roshi, goes on, he says, today there are probably not many people that are still naive enough to agree with this. We have begun to believe that technological development and economic growth are injuring nature and the network of interdependent origination. In other words, we've begun to think that we have been injuring ourselves during the course of our progress, so to speak. But he says, yet what I learned as a child contrasts sharply with the ancient Chinese belief that society had been much more peaceful and harmonious in former times. Ancient Chinese people thought that people in prior times engaged only in wholesome activity without expectation of reward, and they believed that their predecessors refrained from all unwholesome activities, even though there was no social penalty for undesirable behavior. when Dogen says, even these days, there must be some people who seek the way with no expectation of reward. This is beyond the thought of ignorant people. It means that even in his own day, there must be some eminent people who engage in wholesome activity without expectation of reward. Such people would refrain from unwholesome things, not because of fear of punishment, but because they were practicing in accordance with reality, that is, interdependent origination. Such people are called bodhisattvas, according to Mahayana Buddhism. Bodhisattvas do not avoid unwholesome activity out of fear of punishment, and they do not engage in wholesome activity out of expectation. They do so because their behavior is in itself awakening to true reality, the interdependent origination. There's a book called Eihei Shingi, which is Pure Standards for Eiheiji, which is Dogen's monastery, where he gives concrete instructions on how to practice in a Zen community with this attitude of awakening. For example, the cook, the head cook, he says, as I observe the people who are devoting themselves for a year to the jobs of temple administrators or heads of monastic departments in the various temples of Song China. That's when Dogen went to China. That was the Song China. Each of them maintained the three essential attitudes of an abbot whenever they performed their job, encouraging themselves to strive at their tasks, benefit others, which simultaneously gives abundant benefit to the self, make the temple thrive and renew its high standards, and aspire to stand shoulder to shoulder and respectively follow in the heels of our predecessors. Clearly know that there are fools who treat themselves as indifferently as others, and there are honorable people who consider themselves, who consider others as themselves. Dogen vowed to create a community of practitioners that lived with this boundless attitude. This vision of a practice community came from the traditional Buddhist teachings of the four embracing actions. Is such an attitude still possible in this modern society? Dogen said that even these days, quote, there must be such people who hold this attitude, although this attitude was beyond the thought of ignorant people. Was he successful in fulfilling his vow? Was his vision fully actualized? These days for Dogen is now 800 years ago for us, and we are living in an age that is very different from his world. How can we apply this teaching to our own lives in this time? And Dogen says, because wise rulers have clear minds, they do not weary of their people. Although people always desire to form a nation and find a wise ruler, few of them fully understand why a wise ruler is wise. Therefore, they are glad simply to be embraced by a wise ruler. They don't realize that they themselves are embracing a wise ruler. They don't even get it. Thus, the principle of identity action exists both in the wise ruler and ignorant people. This is why identity action is the practice and vow of a bodhisattva. We should simply face all beings with a gentle expression. That's actually Dogen's last line in this, and Okumura Roshi explains, we are like people who, though they don't know what a nation truly is and what a wise ruler truly is, nonetheless wish to form a nation and find a wise ruler. Other than the network of ordinary people like ourselves, there is no nation and there is no wise ruler. Yet we must indeed find a way to embrace a nation and embrace a wise ruler. In other words, if none of us does anything to embrace the entire network of interdependent origination, there is no such network for us. So like, we've got to do it. The network's existence for us depends entirely upon our actions. And this is the guiding principle of Bodhisattva practice. As the conclusion to this piece, Dogen Zenji urges us to simply face all beings with a gentle expression. We can do this without any special training, wealth, or status. Yet this is the most difficult practice that we must practice endlessly. And finally, Dogen concludes, because each of these four embracing actions includes all four embracing actions, there are 16 embracing actions. These four embracing actions all embrace each other. These are not four separate actions. And then he signs it, written on the fifth day of the fifth lunar month in the fourth year of Ninji, all of which means 1243, by Monk Dogen, who went to Song, China, and transmitted the Dharma. So this was written in 1243 by Monk Dogen, who went to Song, China, and transmitted the Dharma. When he means this, he means the Bodhisattva's four embracing actions. So I have six important points for you just to especially remember. The first is practicing the four embracing actions is not simply a method to guide others. It also helps us to awaken and mature. So this is one of the features of identity action is it helps self and others simultaneously. And this is true of the four embracing actions. When we practice them, we benefit both ourselves and others simultaneously. Second, when a Buddha appears in the human realm, that Buddha therefore takes the form of a human being. When a Buddha appears in the animal realm, that Buddha may therefore take an animal form. This is an example of an identity action that the Buddha performs for the sake of helping all beings. The third point, each musical instrument has a different shape, sound, and function. But a collection of instruments played together in a certain way will create one body of harmonious music. Awakening to the reality of non-separation allows us to practice identity action, and identity action creates the music of interdependent origination. Realizing that all beings are players in this symphony allows us to study and understand identity action in our lives. Fourth, just as a wise ruler does not weary of his people, bodhisattvas do not tire of making the effort to live and walk together with all beings. Fifth, bodhisattvas do not avoid unwholesome activity out of fear of punishment, and they do not engage in wholesome activity out of expectation. They do so because their behavior is in itself awakening to the true reality of interdependent origination. And finally, as the conclusion to this piece, Dogen Zenji urges us to simply face all beings with a gentle expression. We can do this without any special training, wealth, or status. Yet this is a most difficult practice that we must practice endlessly. Here is an idea for your reflection during the week. And this will, as usual, be posted on the website. Dogen says that just as a wise ruler does not weary of his people, bodhisattvas do not tire of making the effort to live and walk together with all beings. Here, the concept of continuous effort, or you may remember in the fourth paramita, it is called continuous joyful effort, is central. Another way to say it is keeping on, keeping on. In a different sangha, that's how they talk. They say keeping on, keeping on. This continual effort is the earmark of all saints, as well as all the great Mahayana and Vajrayana teachers. But it's very hard to do. Why? For one, it's an every minute practice. Almost everything we do, if we took one more step, we'd add a lot to the quality of its completion. But as Carl Jung says, human beings are slugs. Basically, we're too lazy. So the assignment is, please examine your own relationship with making continuous effort. Under what circumstances do you succeed? And what are the circumstances when you don't succeed? What are your main obstacles? Choose one obstacle and start now making a conscious effort to get beyond it. This will strengthen you, even if you're only able to do a little, because continuous effort is the secret gate to spiritual practice. Actually, I think that a moment of right effort is a moment of true reality. Increasingly, I'm experiencing that it's the same thing. The moment when you're actually making a correct effort, the true amount of your full-on, wholehearted effort, that's a moment of living in true reality. That's like enlightenment itself. So that's the assignment. It's based on this idea of continuous effort. And I'm giving this assignment because I'm increasingly realizing how central the quality and wholeheartedness of our effort, minute after minute, how critical that is to our spiritual life. Well, we have a little more time than usual for questions. And so I hope you feel free to ask questions, please.
Yeah, so we have a question. And the first one that we have is, we actually are different from others. So what did Dogen mean when he wrote in the first sentence of this section, identify action means to be not different, neither different from self nor from others?
I think what Dogen means when he says to be not different from self or others is the big view of us, like sentient being. We're sentient beings. The other day I was told that the ants in our kitchen came in because it was raining and they were wet and cold and they wanted to find a place that was dry and warm. And I can totally relate to that. And I'm thinking that's identity action, basically. That's being not different. But Okamura Roshi has commented on this. And he says, and he comments on the translation, he says that to be not different might better be translated to be not separate. So the statement would be, identity action means to be not separate from both self and others. So to practice as a bodhisattva would mean to practice as being not separate, as opposed to not different. My own thoughts run along the lines of emphasizing our reality as interconnected beings. When we act with this understanding, we're not separate from ourself or others. That's what I'm thinking myself as a way of understanding this. But I really invite you to find your own ways of understanding seemingly difficult passages in Dogen, because we need to try on different explanations of Dogen's words if we're ever going to succeed in making his understanding our own. So Okamura Roshi went for a different word, a different word to translate instead of not different, not separate. And I'm thinking, if we think in terms of, if we try to keep in mind the interconnectedness of all beings in everything that happens, we're likely to stay with this true reality understanding. Thank you.
Thank you, Gail. So we have another one about Dogen. And the question is, so Dogen says that no true reality exists for us if we do not actually practice identity action. We actualize true reality within our practice. This is another way of expressing Dogen Zenji's teaching. Practice and verification are one. I almost understand, I think, but can you explain more?
This is a really important point, and Dogen makes this point again and again. And it's actually about Zazen. When we, and this is, there's a huge misunderstanding about Zazen. When we take the Zazen posture, we actually are being our original nature. We are actually being true reality. This is not just a meditation technique. Zazen has existed from beginningless time. Buddha didn't invent Zazen. It's Zazen has always existed and it will never not exist. And when we're practicing Zazen, we express our original Buddha nature. That's why we sit. People think they're sitting to get something or to gain something or gain some understanding, gain enlightenment, become a better person. There's all kinds of reasons people sit, and none of them are why we really sit. We sit to express who we are, our original Buddha nature. That our original Buddha nature. That's why we sit. That's the full expression of our Buddha nature. And there's no other, there's nothing to gain. There's nothing to achieve. There's no goal. We just sit to resume our original face, they say in Zen. So when we don't do this, Dogen says that we're practicing from a deluded mind. And this world of delusion is forgetting who we are, which most of us do all the time. And so this is why Zazen is such an important activity for us. And again, it's beyond conceptualizing. We don't even know what Zazen is because we can't conceptualize what it actually is. It's reality beyond earth and space and time. It's very big, vast. Thank you.
Thank you, Gail. So the next one that we have is regarding Dogen's words. In other words, if none of us does anything to embrace the entire network of interdependent origination, there is no such network for us. The network's existence for us depends entirely upon our actions. And this is the guiding principle of Bodhisattva practice. It really puts the emphasis on personal integrity and responsibility, and yes, continuous effort. To me, it seems that selfishness or a me-first attitude increasingly rules the world. What are we supposed to do in the face of this? That is when it seems that our own small actions are meaningless.
Human actions are never meaningless. In fact, they're all we have. And our behavior is an expression of our minds. And if our mind is generous and loving, our behavior will be generous and loving. And I think we've mentioned recently, I think this might be a teaching of Christ, that hate will never solve problems of hate, and love will always solve problems of hate. So you have to stay true to yourself. If you keep your eyes on your own integrity, not on your goal, not on what your goal is, but just your eyes on your own integrity as you behave, you're just doing the right thing for the sake of doing the right thing. That I talked about that quite a bit today in the talk, of just bodhisattvas behave because their actions are in accord with true reality, which is identity action, or the interdependence of all beings. That's the long and short of the reason to behave correctly. But when you do the right thing, when you behave correctly, you're doing the best you can. And you can't do better than the best you can. So the best you can is the best you can do. So there you've got it. So the answer is really, don't betray yourself and your idea of the of what's correct, of correct behavior in the world that's dignified and in line with our increased understanding of ourselves as we don't do anything. We by ourselves do nothing. We can do nothing. It takes all beings together to accomplish a single thing. And that's the truth of interconnected origination, that teaching. So stay with your own understanding and don't denigrate it and think it's meaningless or unimportant. No action of yours, carefully thought through, is unimportant. Thank you.
Thank you, Gail. So another comment that we just got is, I was struck with an odd idea when I heard that Dogen said that we can first see others as ourselves and then see ourselves as others. In my practice, I often look at another and try to see them as a part of myself. But it would be interesting to look at another and see myself as a part of them.
Well, the example from the Lotus Sutra about the son who ran away from his wealthy father's estate, and then the wealthy father, when the wealthy father saw his son wandering around by accident on the property, he took off all his wealthy things and dressed like his son so that his son could identify with him. And then the son was able to recognize that person as being like him, and then the father was gradually able to bring him into line with seeing himself as the other, seeing himself as the being who's empowered to inherit this, all of this wealth. It's, I think the truth of the matter is that it's all the same. The self and others are the same. We're all part of the same interconnected. Ender's net is a really good metaphor, because it's easy to picture this net with little dots, little knots on it. And each little knot is, you know, one of us. So we're a little knot on this net, but then, and anyone who touches one of the knots affects the entire net. And so as a knot, you can experience it yourself, you know, affected by all the other knots. And when you're all the other knots, you can experience each little knot. They're all the same. It's the same. I think that's the whole point of identity action. These concepts are out of our delusion. We've created subject and object. We've created these, we've discriminated ourselves into separation. Oh, that person. But there is no, oh, that person. That person is you. And when we're mean to that person, we're being mean to ourselves. And when that person loses in a game, we think we've won, but actually we've lost too. So it's all the same. I think that's really the point of identity action. It's all the same. And the more we can operate from that perspective, the more close to truth our actions become. And we can, and it shows in our posture, in our dignity, in our integrity, in just the way we hold ourselves. It shows up. I'm afraid I'm almost out of time. And I want to tell you that this concludes, as you know, this concludes the last series of this year. And we'll take a break from now through Christmas and through January, where I will be doing a Zen practice intensive. And I'm going to resume giving Dharma talks. I'm thinking now of the second Sunday in February, February 11th. And you'll receive registration materials as usual the week before. And so if you forget February 11th, you'll get the registration materials the week before. And I'm planning to do a triad of series on my beloved teacher, Suzuki Roshi. So I'm really looking forward to these this teaching that's coming up in February. And before I leave, I'd like to thank you for attending these talks, and those people who attend during the week also, and to my team, Sahar and Brian and Brendan, who do so much work behind the scenes to make everything run smoothly and be possible. Thank you all so much. and I'll see you in February. I hope you have a very restful and peaceful holiday. Bye-bye.